She didn't mention Chip's name, and neither did Jane. Notably, Chip hadn't reappeared in Jane's hospital room during Liz's time there, nor had Caroline or Darcy. Liz had no recollection of bidding farewell to either of them after seeing Caroline in the hall. 2 hours had passed since Liz's arrival at the hospital, and Jane's emergency room doctor had just stepped in for a final consultation, inquiring as to whether Jane had an OBGYN and encouraging her to take prenatal vitamins. Jane informed the doctor that she had been taking them daily for more than 10 months. After she was discharged as a patient, it occurred to her and Liz simultaneously that they were without a car. "Let's start with Mary," Liz said. "She's likelier than Lydia or Kitty to keep her mouth shut." "We aren't calling any of them." Jane's voice brooked no argument. "I'm not ready for them to know." After a few seconds' hesitation, Liz asked, "Could Chip give us a ride?"
"He doesn't get off until 7, Jane said, "and then he has to do charts."
She was changing from her hospital gown into her clothes as she added,
"We'll take a taxi back to the sushi restaurant and get Dad's car, and don't say a word to anyone." "Seriously, Lizzie, not even to Dad in one of those heart-to-hearts you two like to have. Do you swear?"
"Do you have health insurance?" Liz asked. Jane nodded.
"Of course. Do you swear?" On the one hand, Liz was enormously relieved. On the other hand, there was still a secret bankruptcy and a secret pregnancy to contend with. How exactly had her family members found themselves in such circumstances? "My lips are sealed," she said.
Chapter 51. "Chip's parents have a summer house in Maine," Mrs. Bennett said as Liz chopped cauliflower on a cutting board by the kitchen sink, "in Booth Bay Harbor, which is supposed to be stunning. Susie Hickman's sister and brother-in-law go there, and Susie says the views are divine."
"If you want to help, you can wash the cilantro," Liz said, and Mrs. Bennett didn't move from the spot where she stood.
"Obviously, a wedding is usually held where the woman grew up," she continued. "But if Maine is meaningful to Chip, I'm sure one of you other girls will get married at Knox Church."
"Has anything specific led you to believe that Chip and Jane are planning their wedding?" Liz asked. "Because that's not my impression."
Mrs. Bennett appeared offended.
"Well, they're head over heels."
"I think they like each other," Liz said, "but it's still early."
"I prefer when a man officiates," Mrs. Bennett said. "It's more natural. A lady did Allie Carnes' wedding, and she had the oddest little squeaky voice."
Liz had finished chopping the second of two cauliflowers. She lifted the cutting board and dumped its contents into a roasting pan.
"I noticed some boxes in Jane's old room that haven't been opened," she said. "What's in them?"
"Those are presents I'm saving for Christmas." It was tempting, but surely ill-advised, to ask which future recipient of the monogrammed royal blue bath towels happened to share Mrs. Bennett's initials.
"I've started thinking about what will happen when you and Dad sell this house," Liz said. "I wonder if you and I should do some decluttering."
"We wouldn't dream of selling the house," Mrs. Bennett laughed. "We'll be carried from here feet first."
Liz opened the refrigerator, pulled out a bag of cilantro, and turned on the faucet. Avoiding eye contact, she said,
"You realize shopping can be an addiction just like alcohol, right? I don't know if you've ever thought of talking to someone."
"What a preposterous thing to say. Do I appreciate a bargain? I certainly do."
"What if I take some stuff over to the resale shop?" Liz said. "Just dishes we never use, or maybe the furniture in the basement from Granny. You don't have to be involved."
"Granny's furniture is very valuable." Do you know what you ought to be doing instead of meddling? This is just a guess, but dating my cousin?
I'd like to see you do better than Willie.
Since Liz's adolescence, when viewing television commercials that celebrated the ostensibly unconditional love of mothers for their children, or on spotting merchandise in stores that honored this unique bond with poems or effusive declarations, picture frames, magnets, oven mitts, she had felt like a foreign exchange student observing the customs of another country. But if Liz wasn't close to her mother, neither was she consumed with the maternal resentment she had observed in some friends. Her mother had been adequate, often annoying, far from abusive. Liz turned off the faucet and shook the water from the cilantro. With as little emotion as possible, she said, "As a reminder, not everyone gets married, and bringing it up all the time won't increase the chances for any of us. I'm definitely not interested in Willie." Mrs. Bennett's tone was thoughtful rather than intentionally cruel. She said, "You have no idea how lucky you are that someone like him would settle for you." Chapter 52. Jane usually left for Chip's apartment after dinner, but that night she joined Liz, Kitty, and their mother to watch television in the den. When Jane entered the room, Mrs. Bennett looked up from the catalog she was paging through and said, "Is Chip working tonight, honey?" Jane nodded. And even if Liz hadn't known that Chip's shift finished at 7, she'd have been able to tell that her sister was lying. Several minutes later, when Kitty and Mrs. Bennett were discussing whether the throat of the prostitute on the legal drama was likelier to have been slit by her ex-husband or her John, Liz murmured to Jane, "Any word from him?" Somberly, and also quietly, Jane said, "He just called."
"And?"
"We're having dinner the day after tomorrow." This plan did not sound promising to Liz. The formality of it, the delay. She said,
"Did you tell him how far along you are?"
Jane nodded.
"So he was aware the baby wasn't his," Liz thought. "And he wasn't planning to talk about it with Jane for 48 hours.
Jane stayed in the den for no more than 20 minutes and went up to bed before the show's conclusion. Apparently, she was unmotivated to find out that the crime had, as Mrs. Bennett had suspected, been committed by the prostitute's ex-husband. Chapter 53. In the morning, when Liz's phone alarm sounded, Jane said with what Liz suspected was feigned bleariness,
"I'm going to skip the run today."
Though for all Liz knew, her sister was in the grip of morning sickness. Furthermore, Liz had no idea how far into pregnancy vigorous exercise was recommended. After using the bathroom and changing, Liz paused in the door of her childhood bedroom and looked at her sister. The curtains still were closed, but sunrise had occurred, and the room was more light than dark. Liz thought of asking if Jane needed anything, but Jane's breathing was as deep and steady as if she really were asleep again. Chapter 54. Liz found Mr. Bennett in his study. With his computer screen obscured, as usual, from her view, it struck Liz that she had always given her father the benefit of the doubt, assuming him, when in his study, to be immersed in matters that were tedious but necessary, his attention to the welfare of the family steadfast and somehow masculine. She closed the door behind herself and said,
"You need to sell the house. I saw online that the Elbrechts sold theirs for $1.8 million in March. Do you know if they'd renovated their kitchen?"
Mr. Bennett looked at her with amusement.
"You've been busy."
"Let's say you get $1.2 million for this house, which is obviously a very rough guess. You pay off your hospital bills, buy a condo in the 300,000 range. I think you can get 2 to 3 bedrooms for that in Hyde Park. And you draw up a budget for living expenses and stick to it. Oh, and whatever you think of Obama and his health care, you and Mom both need to get insurance through open enrollment, which should start October 1st.
Your mother wouldn't stand for me selling this house.
I don't see how you have a choice. Do you own your cars or lease them?
And what will become of your wastrel sisters?
You're the one who keeps saying they need to leave the nest, and you're right. There's no reason for them not to have jobs. How much are the country club's annual fees?
Your mother would rather drink strychnine than not belong to the Cincinnati Country Club.
Mr. Bennett's expression grew mischievous.
Shall we offer her some?
Are there other major expenses I'm not thinking of? Liz asked. Mom's jewelry must be worth something, right? And there's that portrait in the front hall of whoever it is. Seeming impressed, Mr. Bennett said,
My dear, you're positively cold-blooded.
I bet you guys will feel relieved to live somewhere smaller, without so much stuff. Do you prefer a real estate agent you already know, or someone outside your social circle?
If your mother and I lived somewhere smaller, we might have to actually see each other.
The bills you've gotten from the hospital, Liz said. Have you done anything about them? Have you called anyone? For a few seconds, they watched each other silently. Give them to me, and I'll make an appointment and go in with you, Liz said. The situation won't get better by ignoring it. Chapter 55 Jane's conversation with Chip had not gone well. Although he hadn't explicitly accused her of dishonesty, he'd questioned her assertion that she was pregnant via donor insemination rather than through an encounter in New York of the more traditional kind, which was almost the same thing. It wasn't, Jane told Liz, that he showed a heretofore concealed cruelty. He still seemed like himself, just no longer besotted.
I'm not an idiot, he'd said. It's not like I thought you were a virgin before we met.
When Jane had insisted that there was absolutely no chance her pregnancy had resulted from anything other than the IUI procedure, he'd said,
Then I don't understand why you never told me you were trying to have a baby on your own. How could you keep such a huge secret?
And this question, Jane had to concede, was a fair one. The exchange had taken place at a restaurant downtown, where Jane had driven herself, which, she said to Liz, had been an intimation about the way things would go. Rather than picking her up, Chip had met her in public to break up with her. And did he? Liz asked. Not in so many words, Jane said. But he claimed it wasn't a good night for me to come over because he and Caroline needed to talk about some business stuff. And when we said goodbye, he kissed me on the forehead. Liz could tell that her sister was fighting tears. He said the news was a lot to digest, and he'd probably need a few days. But Lizzie... I'm sure it's over, and I don't blame him. As Jane spoke, it was just after 9 p.m., and the two sisters were standing in the tutor's basement. Instead of watching television in the den, Liz had decided to investigate this subterranean wilderness to which she normally did not descend, except to do laundry or retrieve food from an extra refrigerator. The room containing these appliances was reasonably clear, but three additional rooms were nearly impenetrable storage units for all manner of familial detritus. It was in the largest of the three overstuffed rooms that Jane had found her. I should have told him from the beginning, Jane said, but I guess I was waiting for things to not work out, or else for him to fall for me so completely that he wouldn't care I was knocked up. He's a good guy, Liz said. I bet he'll realize this isn't insurmountable. Maybe. Jane pointed to a witch's hat encircled by a dusty orange velvet ribbon. Isn't that from my fourth grade Halloween costume? And check this out. Liz lifted the hat to reveal a high, narrow marble table with curved legs ending in deer hooves that had once occupied their maternal grandmother's living room. Remember how this used to scare Mary? Why are you down here? Jane asked.
Oh, you know, Liz said. Memory Lane.
Chapter 56. Liz stayed in the basement until past midnight, though as fatigue overtook her, she was chagrined to look around and realize that her efforts had, if anything, made the room look worse. She'd been trying to sort items into broad categories. Dishware, sports equipment, holiday decorations, and she'd partially succeeded while also eliminating already scarce floor space. Plus, she'd encountered at least a dozen spiders, not all of them dead. She'd deal with the mess later, she thought, and she flicked off three light switches and climbed the steps to the kitchen. She didn't, until it was too late, realize that Lydia and Ham Ryan were kissing avidly by the stove. They noticed her at the same time she noticed them, and they sprang apart, Lydia saying in an accusatory tone, "What the hell?"
"Sorry," Liz said. "I was in the basement."
"Hi, Liz," Ham said.
Lydia scowled. "Doing what?" Oh, to be 23, Liz thought. To make out in that way that left your lips swollen and your skin blotchy. Not that Lydia was by any means an innocent, but still, something about her kissing her new boyfriend in their parents' kitchen while everyone else in the house was asleep made Liz wistful.
"I was trying to sort through some junk, and now I'm going up to bed," Liz said. "Hi, Ham."
"I read some of your articles online," Ham said. "The one about Saudi Arabia was fascinating."
"You don't need to butter her up," Lydia said. Ham laughed.
"You think because you don't care what happens in the Middle East, no one else should?"
Looking at Liz, he said,
"How long were you over there?"
10 days, Liz said. "And thank you."
"Don't bother hitting on her," Lydia said. "She has some married boyfriend she thinks none of us know about."
Ham grinned at Liz. His good nature almost made Lydia's alarming statement seem like no big deal, and then he leaned in and kissed Lydia's nose. He said, "At the risk of encouraging you, your jealousy is kind of cute."
Chapter 57.
Poking around on websites for local real estate agencies, Liz discovered that a former Seven Hills classmate named Shane Williams was, by all appearances, successfully selling houses to and for Cincinnatians, among them several professional athletes. Bengals and Reds players both offered written testimonies of Shane's aptitude. While Hyde Park didn't seem to be the main area where Shane conducted business, he had nevertheless sold a handful of properties within a few miles of the Tudor. Liz remembered Shane fondly. He had been warm and outgoing not only in high school, but also the 3 or 4 times they'd crossed paths in their 20s, when their classmates had gathered at bars the night before Thanksgiving. However, in spite of Shane's professional credentials and personal charm, Liz wasn't sure she should contact him. The reason she wasn't certain was that Shane was black and her mother was racist. As with her anti-Semitism, Mrs. Bennett's racism was of the conversational, innuendo-laden variety. She would never be so ignorant as to announce that black people were less intelligent or moral than their white counterparts. But without compunction, she'd tell Liz not to shop at the Kroger in Walnut Hills because it was dirty. And once at Christmas, when Liz had suggested giving Mervetta a cashmere sweater, Mrs. Bennett had said, "Oh, for heaven's sake, Lizzie, Mervetta wouldn't appreciate cashmere." Liz was pretty sure a black adult had never visited her parents' house in a social capacity.
Over the years, black men had fixed the Bennetts' balking dishwasher and overburdened air conditioning pumps, had removed their garbage and repaved their driveway, and for more than a decade, Mervetta had arrived at the Tudor every other Friday at 8 a.m. to vacuum their carpets and scrub their toilets. But it was only ever black girls, Seven Hills classmates, who, in attending birthday parties and sleepovers, had been invited into the Tudor simply to enjoy themselves. And whether or not Liz contacted Shane wouldn't change this fact. He, too, would be an employee. Yet surely hiring the kind of white, female, middle-aged real estate agent her parents might run into at the country club was a bad idea, and likely to spread gossip about the financial situation in which the Bennetts had found themselves. There was, of course, such an abundance of white, female, middle-aged real estate agents that Liz certainly could find one who didn't belong to the country club and whom her parents didn't know. But she liked the idea of working with someone familiar. Was it delusional to hope that her mother's potential discomfort about Shane's race would be eclipsed by her far greater discomfort about needing to move? "Be the change you wish to see in the world," Liz thought, and she emailed her former classmate. Chapter 58. For several more mornings, Jane didn't run with Liz. And on the fourth day, when Liz came back upstairs after eating breakfast, Jane still lay in bed. Liz crossed through the bedroom to take a shower, and after she emerged from the bathroom, dressed quietly. When Jane spoke, however, it sounded as if she had been awake for some time. She said, "Will you hate me if I go back to New York early?" Liz turned around. "Of course not. You probably need to see your obstetrician, right?" "They don't actually test much before the end of the first trimester, although they might because of my age." "You're not thinking..." Liz paused and rephrased the question. "Are you considering, terminating?" "I keep waiting for a text from Chip," Jane said. "I have this idea he'll invite me to come over."
"I think you'll hear from him," Liz said, though as the days had passed, her optimism about what more he'd have to say had diminished.
"I really, really wanted a baby," Jane said. "It was what I wanted most in the world. And now..."
She didn't finish. Liz said, "But you know, Chip, and you don't know the baby yet. I'm sure we'll find your baby totally delightful, but it's hard for an abstract idea to compete with someone you've been hanging out with." Lifting a beaded bracelet from the top of the bureau, Liz added, "I keep meaning to tell you, I found a website for this organization called Alone But Together. It's for women who choose to have kids on their own." Jane smiled sadly. "I've been a paid member for 2 years. You haven't said anything to Mom, have you?"
"God, no."
That Jane wouldn't be able to hide her secret indefinitely was a fact that Liz assumed she didn't need to convey. And Jane's wish to leave Cincinnati was wholly understandable to Liz, even if the idea of staying behind without Jane was disheartening. As Liz slid the bracelet over her left hand, she thought of the year Jane had skipped May Fete because she, Liz, had chicken pox. Liz meant it when she said, "Whatever you want to do, you have my support." Chapter 59. Once again, the scent of nail polish led Liz to Kitty. This time, Kitty was creating on her fingers an intricate tiger pattern of black stripes over a reddish-orange background.
"Lydia and Ham seem kind of serious," Liz said.
"Are they?" As she dipped the brush back into the bottle of black polish, Kitty said,
"Ask her."
"Will you suggest that she invite him to a family dinner? I think Jane and Chip might be done, and meeting Ham could soften the blow for Mom."
Still focused on her fingers, Kitty said, "If you want to make Mom happy, marry Willie."
"Ham seems like a good guy, but if I tell Lydia to invite him, she'll refuse just to spite me."
Kitty glanced up.
"Do you know Ham?"
"I've talked to him a few times."
"Why?"
"There are things about him that might surprise you." The smug and coy expression on Kitty's face, Liz didn't care for it. Nevertheless, she said,
"Like what?"
Kitty shrugged.
"Just things."
"Is he actually a jerk?"
"No."
Really, Kitty looked irritatingly pleased with herself. Partly to change the subject, and partly because it was true, Liz gestured at Kitty's nails and said,
"Have you ever considered doing that professionally? You're really good at it."
Kitty's expression turned sour.
"You're so condescending."
"Kitty, I work in an industry where the best makeup artists and stylists are treated like rock stars. Not that those kinds of careers are the norm, but I bet a regular person can make a decent salary."
Or a regular person could make a salary that compared favorably, Liz thought, to no income at all.
Kitty was watching Liz with doubt.
"Why did Chip and Jane break up?"
"I'm not sure if they want the same things."
"He dumped her?"
"They're still not officially finished, but I think it's mutual." Briefly, Liz was tempted to ask if what Lydia had declared several nights prior in the kitchen was true, that everyone in the family knew about Jasper. He was due to arrive in Cincinnati the following week, and as the date approached, Liz had become increasingly conscious of the oddness of hiding his visit from her family. Yet surely the oddness of his entering the Tudor, which she had no plans for, would be even greater. At least he'd meet Charlotte. For the second of Jasper's two nights in town, Liz had made a dinner reservation at Boca, for which Jane also would join them, assuming she was still around. In any case, asking Kitty about Jasper would eliminate all doubt, and whether because of age difference, geography, or temperament, Liz had never spoken openly to her younger sisters. In certain ways, they knew one another well. They recognized one another's habits and preferences. Yet years could pass without a conversation of real substance occurring between them.
"Chip once had a patient who'd stuck a lime up his butt," Kitty said. "Did you know that?"
"I can only imagine what questions you asked to elicit that information."
Kitty grinned.
"Maybe Chip's proud that he got it out."
Chapter 60.
As Liz and Mr. Bennett left the rehabilitation center after his physical therapy appointment, her phone buzzed with a confusing and unpunctuated text from Jane. "Chip gone." Calling Jane in front of their father was impossible. Then, as they headed south on 71, Mr. Bennett said,
"Stop by the fish market, will you? I'd like some oysters."
She knew he meant the smoked kind, and Liz tried to remember whether smoked oysters were healthy. She said, "A Seven Hills classmate of mine is a real estate agent now, and he can come over and discreetly look at the house. What do you think?"
"Supposing I say no. In that case, what time will this fellow show up?"
If the situation were not so dire, Liz might have felt abashed. She said, "He's free tomorrow at the same time Mom has a Women's League meeting."
"Of course he is."
In the fish market parking lot, Liz said, "Are you okay going in alone?"
"For heaven's sake," Mr. Bennett said. "I'm not a boy in short pants."
"I didn't know if you'd need help carrying stuff." As Liz watched him walk in the rear entrance of the store, she called Jane and said,
"Gone where?"
"To Los Angeles."
Jane sounded more confused than upset.
"Remember when I told you Eligible is doing a reunion show?
He decided to be on it after all.
Did the hospital let him take a leave?
Liz asked. I don't know. He only sent a text.
An unpleasant recognition was spreading within Liz that Jane's worst fears about Chip were wholly justified.
What a flake, Liz said. I'm sorry, but who bails on their job as an ER doctor, after less than 3 months? Will you forward me the text?
Hang on.
A few seconds later, the gray bubble appeared on the screen of Liz's phone.
Hi, want to let you know I'm headed to L.A. today for eligible fan favorites reunion show. Been wondering if Dr. Wright fit. Great getting to know you. You are really special person.
Raising the phone back to her ear, Liz said, Is this a joke?
He must have been in a hurry,
Jane said. I don't care if his hair was on fire. This is appalling.
I want to feel compassion for him.
Jane's voice was firmer.
I don't like being angry. Jane, even a yogi can be pissed when her boyfriend turns out to lack basic communication skills.
Liz could see their father emerge from the store carrying a plastic bag.
I know I can, Jane said. I just don't want to.
Well, you're definitely better off without him.
How rapidly Liz's once favorable opinion was curdling. What unflattering details previously ignored could be marshaled as evidence for a contrary view. Chip had been nice enough, yes, but clearly narcissistic and immature. He had never been serious about medicine or her sister.
Dad and I will be home in 5 minutes, Liz said. Want to go to Grater's and drown our sorrows in mocha chip ice cream?
As Mr. Bennett opened the passenger side door, Jane said,
I hope you know how much I appreciate your support, Lizzie. But now I think it really is time for me to leave Cincinnati.
Chapter 61 Liz had scheduled Shane Williams's visit to the tutor for 1 o'clock. Meanwhile, her father had, albeit without good humor, agreed to ask Mary to drive him to the Mercantile Library, and under the guise of sisterly thoughtfulness, Liz had scheduled a prenatal massage for Jane. Though Lydia and Kitty were unaccounted for, they were the least likely to be home in the middle of the day. Shane remained much as Liz remembered him. Fit, preppy, cheerful, and loquacious. After she opened the front door of the tutor and he leaned in to hug her, she stole a glance at his ring finger and noted that it was bare. In light of Shane's profession, there was a decent chance he was gay. Yes, he'd been the prom date of her friend Rachel in 1993, but back then, even at Progressive Seven Hills, students hadn't exactly been bursting out of the closet.
If anyone comes home, we can pretend we're just catching up, Liz said. I know I mentioned this on the phone, but my dad hasn't told my mom they need to move.
Such candor about her family's financial predicament would, Liz knew, particularly displease her mother. But Liz didn't see how she had the luxury of discretion.
It's a beautiful house, Shane said.
As Liz led him into the living room, she said,
How have the last 20 years treated you?
Shane laughed.
Can't complain.
He gestured toward the large water stain on the wall.
What's up with that?
It looks awful, doesn't it? I keep meaning to call a contractor and figure out the problem.
As long as you're at it, you could think about painting this room. If you went a few shades lighter, it would really brighten things up. Maybe a pale gray or ecru.
As he spoke, Liz noted, how had this fact never registered with her, that the walls were an uninviting mustard shade.
If you replace the painting over the mantel with a mirror, that'll also help light-wise,
Shane was saying. Liz pulled her phone from her pocket and typed in his suggestions as they moved from the living room back through the front hall to the den,
then the dining room. In the kitchen, Liz said, "Unfortunately, since the goal is to sell quickly, I can't see them doing a full renovation here."
"At least this is really open," Shane said. "Buyers like that now."
Upstairs, his suggestions were similar. Painting the walls, removing clutter, fixing anything conspicuously broken, such as the pocket door on the tiny bathroom in Mary's room, which had for at least a decade closed no more than halfway. In Kitty's room, Liz said, "In case this isn't obvious, my three younger sisters still live here. I'm not sure if it's the boomerang generation thing or just their personal immaturity, but they basically..."
Before she could complete the thought, a form rose from the swirl of sheets and pillows on the double bed and took the shape of Kitty herself. Bleary-eyed and messy-haired, yet still displaying her unconcealable native beauty, Kitty squinted at Liz and her guest.
"Why are you in my room?" she pointed to Shane. "Who are you?"
Uneasily, Liz said, "This is my friend Shane. I didn't realize you were here."
"Shane Williams," Shane said warmly, and he waved. "A pleasure to meet you."
Kitty stood, apparently unself-conscious about wearing a t-shirt, a pair of pink-striped underwear, and nothing else. She glared at Liz.
"I'm not immature."
"I didn't mean you," Liz said.
"You know what? We'll give you privacy."
Hastily, Liz led Shane to the third floor and then to the basement.
"Steel yourself for the worst," she said
as they descended to the tutor's lowest level, and Shane said,
"You'd be surprised what I've seen."
In the front hall again, Liz said,
"Be totally honest. How much do you think my parents can get?"
"Hyde Park is always desirable, and this is one of the premier streets. But I can't lie. Your folks will see better offers if they do some updating."
"But it's still worth at least $1 million, right?" Liz said. "Even in the condition it's in?"
"Let's say you declutter like crazy," Shane said, "because you're just shooting yourself in the foot otherwise. But if that's it and you do nothing else, yeah, I'd say asking $1 million is reasonable. Or maybe we price it at 1.1 million with the hope of grossing $1 million even."
"You're trying to sell our house?" Kitty said. And Liz looked up to see her sister on the stairs. Though 15 minutes had elapsed since their last encounter, Kitty still wore nothing other than the t-shirt and underpants.
"Do Mom and Dad know?"
Liz exchanged a look with Shane.
"They're getting old, Kitty. They can't stay here forever."
"We won't do anything without your parents' blessing," Shane said. "Here."
He walked up a few steps and passed Kitty a business card.
"Any questions I can answer for you, anything you want to talk about, call me 24/7.
Kitty glanced at the card, then looked between Shane and Liz.
"Shane and I went to Seven Hills together," Liz said. "I didn't just meet him for the first time today."
"I've got a showing now out in Sycamore," Shane said. "But Kitty, really, don't be shy."
Was he, Liz wondered, hitting on her sister? To Liz, he said,
"You and I can touch base later today or tomorrow."
"Please don't say anything to anyone else," Liz said to Kitty after Shane left. "I'm only doing due diligence."
"But we're happy living here." Kitty's expression was petulant.
"It's not fair for you to kick us out, then go back to New York."
Chapter 62. "Need to talk to you," the text from Charlotte read. "Got him in?"
"What's up?"
Liz said after she'd called her friend.
"I hope you won't be weirded out," Charlotte said.
And Liz detected in Charlotte's tone both pleasure and genuine nervousness.
I'm pretty surprised myself, but here goes. After you and I had drinks last week, I sent an email to Willie, just like, hey, heard your trip to Cincinnati may have ended on a strange note. Hope you're taking care. He emails back right away and wants to know if he can call me, and I say sure. We end up talking till 4 in the morning. Then the next night, the same thing. To make a long story short, he's invited me to visit him this weekend. We're talking about Cousin Willie, right? Liz said. That Willie? Yes, Charlotte said. That Willie. You shouldn't feel sorry for him, Liz said. Willie's a big boy. Some retracting on Charlotte's part occurred. I don't feel sorry for him. As if she were unaware of the retracting, as if this conversation had not become deeply strange, Liz said, How did you have his email? We'd exchanged cards at Chip's dinner party. Which, in itself, in light of subsequent developments, seemed suddenly suspicious. There was something displeasing to Liz about this unexpected association between Charlotte and Willie, and an additionally displeasing awareness of her own displeasure. If Charlotte was happy, and indeed this was how she sounded, shouldn't Liz be happy for her? Obviously, you can do whatever you want, Liz said. But you don't think he's like a tech doofus? Coldly, Charlotte said, No, I don't. I don't mean doofus like he's an idiot. He's very smart. He's just, I don't know. He's so awkward. You don't think? She was making things worse, not better, and she could hear herself doing it. But Charlotte and Willie? Really? I've got to get ready for a meeting, Charlotte said. I'd appreciate if you don't mention this to your family. Why was Liz the repository for everyone's confidences? She wanted to say something complimentary about Willie, but it was hard to figure out what. When the call had ended, Liz winced, balled her right hand into a fist, and bit her own knuckle. Chapter 63. On the third floor, Jane stood in warrior pose, her left leg extended behind her and her arms outstretched. As Liz entered the bedroom, Jane gracefully let her arms return to her sides and said, Amanda and Prisha want to hire me as their private yoga instructor, and they told me I can live with them for as long as I want, even after the baby comes. Though Liz felt some dismay, the plan made sense. Amanda was a college friend of Jane's, a Barnard graduate who'd made a fortune at a hedge fund before trading corporate life in Manhattan for recreational beekeeping and lucrative long-distance part-time consulting from the Hudson Valley. Amanda's wife, Prisha, was a high school English teacher, and they lived with their 8-year-old son, Gideon, on a bucolic 5-acre spread 2 hours from the city. Do you think you'll tell Mom and Dad you're pregnant before you leave? Liz asked. Jane shook her head. I want to sit with it a while longer. Liz sighed. Well, there's something I have to tell you. It turns out Mom and Dad are hugely in debt. Jane looked aghast, and Liz said, I know, but it is what it is, and their only choice is to sell the house. You shouldn't worry, but if you were planning to borrow money from them in the next little while, borrow it from me instead. Just focus on taking care of yourself. The reason I'm telling you is that this could be the last time you're in the house. I feel terrible. I had no idea, because you weren't supposed to. None of us were. Have you bought your plane ticket to New York? For a week from today. Does that mean I'll miss Jasper? Sorry, but no such luck. He gets to town Wednesday. Liz leaned against her desk and folded her arms. So, you won't believe this, but Charlotte and Cousin Willie have been talking on the phone, and now they think they're in love and she's going to visit him.
Liz expected Jane to react with either disgust or amusement, but her sister was serene.
I can see them as a couple, Jane said.
Chapter 64. After parking in the P3 garage at Christ Hospital, Liz and her father took the skywalk to Level A, whereupon Mr. Bennett asked the young woman at the information desk for the location of the administrative suite.
The billing department is that way, Liz pointed.
We're going to see Dick Lucas.
But we have an appointment with a financial counselor named Chad Thompson.
Mr. Bennett's expression was thoughtful.
Men named Chad make me uneasy.
Is Dr. Lucas expecting us?
He held Liz New some sort of executive position at the hospital. Though Liz wasn't sure precisely what it was. She wondered if he was aware of Charlotte's trip to Palo Alto to see Cousin Willie.
I assure you, Dick won't turn us away,
Mr. Bennett said. This turned out to be accurate. In the administrative suite, Mr. Bennett gave his name to the woman at the reception desk, and no more than a minute later, Dr. Lucas appeared in the seating area in a gray suit, a yellow tie dotted with a pattern of tiny blue hummingbirds, and a white coat.
Fred and Liz,
he said in a voice that implied he couldn't imagine a more pleasurable surprise.
To what do I owe the honor?
If we might have a word in private.
Mr. Bennett nodded toward the receptionist. In Dr. Lucas's office, Liz and her father sat in chairs facing a massive cherry desk, on which rested a gold nameplate that read, Richard G. Lucas, Vice President and Chief Clinical Officer.
Sally and I have gotten ourselves in a bit of a pickle,
Mr. Bennett said.
Apparently, my stay here earlier in the summer wasn't all expenses paid. Would that it had been,
Dr. Lucas said warmly.
We're having a liquidity issue, and Liz here is convinced that if we don't pay up on time, a shady character will find us and break our kneecaps.
Dr. Lucas chuckled.
We can't have that, can we?
Liz cleared her throat and said,
My dad doesn't have health insurance.
Dr. Lucas winced, but still somehow affably.
Tisk, tisk, Fred. I'm no more a fan of our president than you are, but when open enrollment starts, I'd urge you to sign up.
Liz said,
I'm under the impression that sometimes hospitals have flexibility in terms of payment plans.
She'd anticipated marshaling her shaky internet-gleaned knowledge to bargain with Chad Thompson, a stranger, and she found it more rather than less uncomfortable to do so with a man who, in her youth, had prepared pancakes that she and Charlotte ate in their pajamas after sleepovers. Still, Liz tried to sound mature and professional as she added,
I know that the cost of procedures can vary from hospital to hospital, and also that lots of medical bills contain mistakes. I'm wondering...
Easy there, Liz,
Mr. Bennett interrupted.
No, she's quite right, Dr. Lucas said. Mistakes happen, and there's nothing wrong with using a fine-tooth comb to go over the figures. Here's what I recommend. We have a crackerjack team down in our billing department, and there's a fellow by the name of Chad Thompson. I'll call him now, tell him my good friends are on their way, and I'm certain we can figure out a payment plan that works for the Bennett family and for the hospital. How does that sound?
Although there was some vindication in hearing Chad Thompson's name, the vagueness of Dr. Lucas's plan failed to entirely reassure Liz. She blurted out,
My parents are selling their house, so that should help with cash flow.
Mr. Bennett leaned forward.
Entree new, he said to Dr. Lucas.
Absolutely, Fred. Absolutely. Life is complicated. I'm just relieved you're sitting across from me now looking hale and hearty.
He glanced at Liz.
Your father gave us quite a scare, didn't he?
And thank you for everything you did. Everything everyone here did to take care of him, Liz said. I hope it doesn't seem like I'm not grateful.
She shows her gratitude by accusing the people who saved my life of malfeasance, Mr. Bennett said to Dr. Lucas. As you can imagine, her mother and I are very proud.
Chapter 65. Liz would have estimated that there were 20 boxes in Jane's former bedroom. When she counted, there were 61. She looked at the dates of the packing receipts for the boxes she'd already opened. And the pineapple throw pillow was from 2008. Online, she had found a so-called eBay valet, a woman who lived 10 miles away in Terrace Park and would resell these items and return to Liz 70% of their sale price. Kathy DeBerg was a believer that it was better to ask for forgiveness than permission. In Revolutions and Rebellions, she had described learning this lesson during the 1970 women's strike for equality. And it was in a DeBergian spirit that, after taking inventory of all of the box's contents, Liz loaded up her father's Cadillac and made 2 trips to the valet's house. Fortuitously, Liz didn't encounter anyone while carrying boxes from the 3rd floor to the driveway. One of the virtues of the Tudor was the privacy offered by its capacious dimensions. And though Liz suspected that this fact reflected poorly on her, she was at times most able to enjoy her family members when she could sense their presence nearby without actually interacting with them. At the conclusion of her 2nd round trip to Terrace Park, Liz called the number for a general contractor whose receptionist scheduled a water stain evaluation for 2 days hence. After the call, Liz felt a sense of achievement that she realized wasn't commensurate with the day's modest progress. The meetings with Dr. Lucas and Chad Thompson, the drop-offs to the valet, and the appointment with the contractor were steps in the right direction. But to see them as true resolution could only be folly.
Chapter 66. I've been offered a position as a private yoga instructor by some friends in upstate New York, Jane said at dinner. It's been wonderful being home, but I'm moving there next week.
Bravo,
Mr. Bennett said, just as Mrs. Bennett, with great distress, asked, But what about my luncheon? And for God's sake, Jane, what about Chip? He'll be devastated. As a matter of fact, Jane said, Chip is in Los Angeles now, shooting an eligible reunion. A silence followed. Then several family members spoke at once. When did this happen? Said Mrs. Bennett. Is he hanging out in hot tubs with other girls? Said Kitty. Why would he sign on for that all over again? Said Mary. Said Lydia. Maybe so he can hang out in hot tubs with other girls. How long will he be gone? Mrs. Bennett asked Jane. You'll have to get back here by the time he returns. Jane's eyes met Liz's, and Liz was tempted to announce herself that Jane and Chip had broken up. What did postponing the news achieve? I don't know if Chip is coming back, Jane said.
But the hospital must be counting on him, Mrs. Bennett said.
It's obvious he's always been torn between Hollywood and medicine, Liz said.
Mrs. Bennett looked suspiciously at Jane.
Are the friends you're staying with those ladies?
Those ladies was how Mrs. Bennett had referred to Amanda and Prisha ever since Jane had told her mother of their marriage years earlier. Having met Amanda during Jane's undergraduate years, Mrs. Bennett had said,
I did always think she had very manly posture.
Yes, Jane said, and I'm really looking forward to working with them.
If Chip wants you to move out to California, you're a fool to tell him no, Mrs. Bennett said. A man with his background and education can't be expected to wait around while you dilly-dally.
Mary, maybe you should be the one to move in with those ladies, Lydia said. I think you guys have something in common.
Lydia, when do Mom and Dad get to meet Ham?
Liz asked.
When I feel like it, Lydia said.
Who, pray tell, is Ham? Mr. Bennett said.
He went to the University of Washington out in Seattle, Mrs. Bennett said. And Lydia glared and said, Have you been stalking him?
Mrs. Bennett looked affronted.
Lizzie told me.
She turned to Jane.
I saw some place settings in the Gumps catalog that are very elegant. You should start thinking about what you want to register for so you're ready when the time comes.
Chapter 67. The deadline for Liz's pay raise article had come and gone, and Liz still hadn't heard back from Kathy DeBerg's publicist. Feeling un-Kathy DeBergishly defeated, Liz emailed the article to her editor at Talia.
So sorry the interview didn't come through, Liz typed. Good news is I have solid quotes from high-ranking women at IBM. Maybe reconnect with DeBerg in the future?
Chapter 68.
The night before Jasper's arrival in Cincinnati, while watching television in the den with Jane, Kitty, and Mrs. Bennett, Liz said during a commercial,
Kitty, will you give me a pedicure?
Kitty looked at her with confusion.
Why?
Because you're good at it and I need one.
Liz extended her legs and wiggled her toes.
Fine, but I'm not touching your calluses, Kitty said.
It's a deal,
Liz said.
The calluses are because you run too much,
Mrs. Bennett said without glancing up from her catalog. All that jostling is bad for your ovaries, too.
In Kitty's bathroom, which was where she and Liz adjourned to, Kitty was thoroughly professional in demeanor as she applied the layers of polish, focused and serious in a way Liz had never seen. Perhaps most impressive of all, Kitty owned pale pink disposable foam toe separators, which she inserted and told Liz to wear for the next 45 minutes while the polish dried.
I've never waited that long in my entire life, Liz said,
and Kitty said,
I put 4 coats on. Trust me.
With the separators in, Liz walked on her heels down the hall to Mary's room and knocked on the door. After a minute, Mary opened it just a few inches, as if concerned about intruders.
How's it going?
Liz said.
What do you want? Mary asked.
I'm just coming to say hi.
It was shortly after 11 p.m., and during her pedicure, Liz had heard Mary climb the stairs, apparently returning from wherever she'd been.
Did you have a good night?
Liz asked.
You're acting weird, Mary said.
Trying to maintain a casual tone, Liz said,
Where do you go on Tuesdays anyway?
Really, the omerta surrounding Mary's nightlife made no sense.
Nowhere, Mary said.
Warmly, Liz said,
Well, obviously, you go somewhere.
I'm not gay, if that's what you're asking.
The inquiry was going less well than Liz had hoped.
I wasn't, she said, which may not have been entirely true. In fact, I was wondering if it had ever occurred to you to find out what happened to Alan Bausch.
Mary squinted.
My prom date? That guy was such a loser.
Switching tacks, Liz said,
Of all the degrees you have, which one do you think you're most interested in pursuing for a career?
I won't finish this one until December.
It's a master's in psychology, right?
Liz said, and Mary nodded.
Would you like to be a therapist?
Liz asked.
The notion seemed at best ill-advised and at worst harmful to others. To her relief, Mary shook her head. I'm studying applied psychology, not clinical.
Remind me what people do with applied psychology degrees?
Mary shrugged. Employee training, product testing.
You should work for Procter & Gamble, Liz exclaimed.
Seeing that her zeal seemed to repel Mary, Liz added more calmly,
I'm sure Charlotte would be happy to talk with you.
Presumably, Liz thought, her own awkward last encounter with Charlotte wouldn't make an entreaty from Mary unwelcome. Liz then wondered how Charlotte's visit to see Cousin Willie had gone.
Are you asking me this stuff for an article you're writing? Mary said, and Liz said, Can't I just be interested in your life?
Yeah, right. Mary nodded with her chin toward the floor, where Liz's toes were 5 different candy colors on each foot. She said,
That looks ridiculous.
Chapter 69. The Cincinnati airport, while indeed an airport, was not actually in Cincinnati. Rather, it was located across the river in Hebron, Kentucky. And this was where Liz picked up Jasper Wick just before noon. He'd texted her after his plane landed, as she was pulling off the highway, and by the time he emerged from the terminal, Liz was waiting by the curb. She climbed from the car to wave, and when Jasper smiled, he looked exceptionally handsome. His curly blonde hair was thinner than it had once been, but still abundant enough to be windblown, and his brown eyes remained mirthful. He kissed her on the mouth. This was a bolder display of affection than they partook of in New York, and that even in Cincinnati did not feel risk-free. And Liz said, Welcome to the Natty.
You didn't tell me the airport's a ghost town. I think a tumbleweed just blew by.
It used to be a Delta hub, but that was a while ago.
Jasper set his suitcase in the trunk, which Liz closed. Inside the Cadillac, she said,
Should we eat first, or just go straight to your hotel?
In case her meaning wasn't clear, she wiggled her eyebrows exaggeratedly.
Actually, I need you to drop me at Avis. You know where that is?
Liz looked at him in confusion.
Why did I pick you up if you're renting a car?
I didn't know if this was one of those airports where the rentals are 1 million miles from the terminal. Plus,
he smiled at her,
I wanted to see you.
Jasper, I could have been working.
I thought we were about to go have a nooner. Don't be mad, Nin. I didn't rent the car until yesterday because I didn't realize how far apart my hotel and the sports mall are.
Sighing, she started the car and followed the signs to Avis, which was under 1 mile from the terminal. As Jasper stepped from the car, he said,
I'll text you my room number when I check in.
She shook her head.
Let's just go get lunch. Meet me at the Skyline Chili on Madison Road in Oakley.
Jasper laughed.
Making me work for it now, huh?
He said.
Okay, I'll play.
Chapter 70.
Big news,
Jasper said as the waitress at Skyline set down their dishes of oyster crackers.
I had a drink with Brett Yankowitz yesterday.
This was, Liz knew, a powerful literary agent, though she had never met him.
He digs my book idea about that Idaho fly fishing family.
Jasper continued.
If he sells it, I'll take a leave in the spring.
Will Sporty let you?
Contrary to the rumors Jasper had previously shared with Liz, no announcement had occurred about the firing of the editor-in-chief of Dude. Jasper said,
If they want to keep me, they will. How long you think it'd take me to write a book? 3 months? 4?
Don't you need to finish the first 50 pages for Yankowitz to sell it?
Presumably.
so keep track of your average daily word count.
I bet you...
At that moment, Liz glanced at a person passing her in Jasper's table and was startled to make eye contact with Fitzwilliam Darcy. He was approaching from the rear of the restaurant and was no more than 3 feet away. To pretend she hadn't noticed him would be preposterous.
"You really are a regular here," she said,
and Darcy said, "I'm a man of my word."
"Wait a second," Liz said. "You guys know each other."
If she hadn't been aware of Jasper and Darcy's mutual antipathy, she'd have immediately intuited it. Jasper did not stand to greet his former college classmate. Instead, coolly, Jasper said,
"Fitzwilliam Darcy, it's been a while."
Equally coolly, Darcy said,
"It has."
Liz wondered if he'd eaten alone again.
"I wouldn't have expected you to wash up in Cincinnati," Jasper said.
To Liz, he added,
"No offense." "I'm a physician at a stroke center here," Darcy said. "I'm in town from New York to write about squash for Sporty, where I'm a senior editor. Also about to sign a contract for a book about the royal family of American fly fishing." "Congratulations," Darcy said,
and surely the word had never been uttered with less enthusiasm. Darcy looked between her and Jasper.
"I won't keep you," he nodded. "Liz?"
When he'd moved on, Liz said,
"Remember Chip, the eligible guy Jane was dating? Darcy's good friends with him. Oh my God, have I not told you that Jane's pregnant?"
"No shit. From the mail order sperm or the old